of those that had the wealth at the time were non-natives. And the concept of wealth after the Claim Settlement Act, every native in this country was a millionaire. At least that was in the minds of the public. And in some cases still is. As bad as it is, thank God every now and then we see a corporation failing, because then people take a realistic look at where natives really are. As bad as that is, it does wake people up to the fact that every native on the street is not a millionaire. But during the initial stages after the Claim Settlement Act, everybody had the impression that every native was a millionaire. And so in the Western society and the way they structure class, natives really came up in that ladder. They were right on the top rungs with everybody else, and it was surprising. Before, you weren't getting hustled by every hustler in the street trying to sell this flim-flam gimmick and this option, and this consultant wasn't chasing you and that lawyer wasn't chasing you. But after the Claim Settlement Act, they would just swarm around natives. And today, some of that is still happening. But it did give the native, in general, an uplift in that structure, because those that felt inferior all of a sudden felt superior. And it did give us that boost that we needed as a people in that system. Now, that really didn't affect those in villages, because they knew what was really important. And in their own communities, they had their own systems of who was important and who wasn't, and those systems still worked. But when you came to Anchorage and Fairbanks, you fell into this system. And for a while, natives were equal, and they took the leadership roles, and I think we're still taking those today because of the Claim Settlement Act. So that was probably one of the more positive acts, positive aspects of the act. It did push us forward much faster than we would have without the act. We were forced into roles and given those roles that we would never have had the opportunities to take. We were put in the
position. I hope that the process of understanding what is truly represented in the 100 chairs is finished or continues. One of the somewhat solutions to the owning shares in an anchor corporation for non-participants is the suggestion of, you could will your shares to your children, you can will your shares to the children born after 1971. But that's not true, because the first thing that happens is, let's say, for instance, a family has two children. And you have one native parent and a non-native parent. The shares are, let's say, willed to two of the children, 50-50. So you now have two native people owning 50 shares each. Then that's in the first generation. Now, that could be fully diluted if you have more children. It just goes out. If you have four children, it's 25 shares. If you have 10 children, it's 10 shares. So in the first generation, you can have the shares being diluted right down to almost nothing, and in fact lost in the first two, three generations. So that's a proposed solution. It's willing, but it isn't. It's a problem, and we have to deal with that. I think some shareholders are rightfully confused about land ownership. And what I'm talking about there is the land ownership by the village corporation versus land ownership by the regional corporation, which Gene George brought out in his statement, is the fact that the village corporation owns surface land and the regional corporation in the same area owns the subsurface land. And if there is development by the village corporation, by the regional corporation, how do they get along?
Born after 1971 and there be a stock dividend instead of a cash dividend of $100 to all shareholders enrolled to that corporation, and I hope avoiding any litigation if we treat everybody equal. Again, protection of our corporate land, I have down here, involvement of shareholders in the corporation's plan and implementation of these plans with continuous communication, be it newsletters, radio, the schools, and person to person. It's a continuing educational experience for all of us, for we do not have did not have college degrees when we started out. Receiving the benefits by shareholders today, I am very concerned about our elderly and our youth, our people that are unable to get a job, and there are ways that our corporation, who are making money, or could involve the, all of our shareholders. I believe that enterprise and culture can work together positively. Monetary success has provided stronger cultural activities in many of the lower 48 and Alaska Native groups. With more cash flow, we have more time for strengthening our culture. And I believe we have the best of all worlds if we would just take advantage of it. Some of the advantages we have as an ANCSA corporation are: we are a legal entity as a village corporation. Our shareholders are also shareholders in regionals, and we could benefit from both. While operating as a profit-making corporation, we, as well as our nonprofit village corporation councils, can obtain federal, state, local, and private monies from grants and or loans with...
They're separated. Allotments have nothing to do with 1991, but this is a source of confusion, and it's never really been cleared up by the BIA or the government that has a responsibility to do this sort of thing. The government has a trust relationship with these people, but I think that relationship has become more restrictive than protective. The government, through the BIA, exercises the right of approving transactions over these allotments, when actually I think what they should be doing is just telling people, giving them information and giving them assistance in how to make a good informed decision, and then let them make that decision. When actually they're approving what people, you know, they're making decisions for people, and that's, I don't think that's their right. I don't think they should have that veto power over a transaction unless there's an indication of fraud or some kind of questionable tactics involved. And I don't think they're making enough of an effort to get out the information to these folks that they need to know, because there's so much confusion about what lands they're even talking about. People talk about their allotments and corporation lands together, and they don't understand the differences in them. The effect of these allotments, they also cloud the title of some of the corporation lands, because they're inholdings within the corporation selections, and they're inholdings within state selections. And there's a big source of trouble with that, not so much with the corporations, but with the state. The state has opposed the conveyance of a lot of these allotments. They protested almost 6,000 of them for questionable reasons. And that went ahead. They were allowed to do that and got away with it, partly because these people don't have the political clout. They don't have the lawyers and so forth that corporations have. There's not a unified group. There are organizations that represent them, but a lot of that has to be channeled through the BIA, and they're not a very effective group up in Alaska. I don't know how they are outside. Another problem with them is that the way these things are handled, the BLM does the application process. They check the claims, and then they do the surveys, and then they turn it over to BIA. But if it's inside
for example, we have the case where one corporation is, I don't think it's just one corporation, but we have the question of what about shareholder trespass? how can you have a shareholder trespass against the corporation? I get questions like that all the time.
It's corporation property.
Yes. You know, the shareholder decides he's going to go out and build a cabin like his grandfather did. Goes out there on the corporation lands and builds it, and all of a sudden he's got some lawyer from Anchorage in a slick suit with a piece of paper saying that he's in trespass. That creates some concerns. You have the same problem about timber cutting. If a person has wood on his, if a person's grandfather went out, cut wood and brought it back, and that's how they heated the home. He does that now, and he may have to pay $5 to the corporation for the right to do that. That's certainly not what people intended in the settlement of the Alaska Native land claims. And the corporation-shareholder relationship, and I think why we hear the cry for tribalism and the return to a kind of a unified Native existence, is that the corporate structure is being fully implemented under the Claims Act. The Native corporations and the leadership has really bought into the idea that that corporation is exactly what the law says it is, a separate entity with separate rights, independent of its corporate shareholders. That doesn't mean that the Native leadership is necessarily saying, well, you know, we have to do dirt to the Natives. All it means is that they're trying to implement.
If you're free now and you're not going to get in trouble with the courts.
Name's John Heffel, and I'm president of the Association of Mature Eskimos. And the main reason I came up here is all the things that these people see, what's happening right now, they're hollering tribal sovereignty, problems with the lands claims. I brought up in 1970, 71, and then again in the paper in 1975, and I was called an alarmist, that what you foresee will never happen. And here we are today. It just took a while. I'm not a soothsayer, but I could read. The biggest problem with land claims is when the guys first got together a long time ago and started all this, it was a good idea, and they should be thanked for what they've done. But the mistake is they never really went back to the villages and asked the people that lived the old way, the subsistence way of life, what they thought, and get input. And it might have worked a lot better, because the government, especially the Bureau of Indian Affairs and Department of Interior, let's show 93638, Indian self, which is an individual, when I went to school. Determination and Education Act. So there's testimony after testimony about the word tribes, which was fine for the lower 48, but there's villages here. It didn't fit the people. Didn't fit nothing. And when it came out, if you read a little portion, yay big, Federal Register, it says, although we have had testimony to the contrary, we feel it's in the best interest of these people. You have too much white people. The Ashendi, the White Eyes, they come up and always try to tell the Native people what's the best for them. Case in point, Eskimo Village. It's been here, was the inception of, in the early 1940s, Second World War, 30 families brought down. They put them on what's now Garden Island Liquor Store. It's called Eskimo Camp. They had them in these boxcars for a while, and then they moved them on to, by the roundhouse, James Ways.
When did you say that was, during the war?
Yeah, during the war. And the letters, which somehow disappeared, used to be in the files of the railroad, they were given a choice, army or work for your government, for defense. Well, it's one way to make money, and some of them were too old to go in the army anyway. But they came down, and the village went on and on and on and on. Traditional council. minded her own business and her own affairs.
Dan, even I was brought up in the white man world, but I was raised on moose meat and things like that and fish. I can eat beef up to a certain point, but when that old hunger for moose meat gets there, there's nothing going to stop me from going out and begging for a piece of moose meat if anybody's got any. And I do get very bitter about the older people. I feel very bad. Oh, you can't change this, they said. You can't change Anska. Yet I've had people tell me that it has been, well, the least I know of, it has been changed 9 times to benefit certain groups of people. Once a year, the older people get recognition up here. Our traditional chief comes up and makes a speech, and everybody gets up and make a speech. Everything is fine. There's a beautiful rainbow. The birds are singing and everything. A few days later, you don't see nobody. They don't pay no more attention to them. And I don't know, maybe they're happy with it, getting that attention once a year. But I'm not. I am not happy with it. I want to see more done. I would like to see more done for our older people. Let them take life easy. What if they're going to go spend it on bingo? What if they're going to go travel? They're entitled to it. They're entitled to a little something. Not many of them drink anymore, or the younger generation has kind of taken over that. But I don't know, I can talk for hours on this. And you talk about the young people, like Mr. Heffel said. That's another thing that hurts me, is this high suicide rate we have among our young people. When I was growing up,